Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to a Life in Ruins podcast, where we investigate the careers of those living life in ruins. I'm your host, Carlton Gover, and I'm joined by my co-host, David John. David.
The fully white one is not here.
I'm here with David, David Ian Howe, just me and David today, just the two of us, just broing it out for this lovely, lovely episode 130. So the last time we recorded together, I think was it in July?
Probably, dude. Who did we interview?
I don't recall, man. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast. Well, I guess that's not true. I recorded Chance. He came out. Not Chance the Rapper, Chance the Lakota.
Georgia Butcher. My goodness.
So yeah, August. It's been like 6-7 weeks.
Yeah, we've had a busy summer, you and I.
Yeah, I think, and so has Connor. I think the three of us finally hit that point of do we even want to do this anymore, because we got really drunk at Crave's wedding when the three of us were together last and had to have that conversation of like, what are we doing at this
Everyone
moment?
Everyone was like, hey, wait, you didn't help clean up the wedding. What were you doing? I was like, we're talking podcasts. They're like, is the band breaking up? And then I talked to a few people about it around Wyoming. They're like, dude, I go to Wyoming because of this podcast. Shout out Jacob Ardzin. And I was like, oh, shit. Right. We do good work. We've got to keep doing this.
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, we've been doing this for almost, we started this in 2019. So yeah, like 3 years ago. Yeah, pre-pandemic. Yeah. We've been doing this for 3 years. And we just, this was the summer where we were just all, do you have the traveling van? Got a job in Wyoming. I moved states again and trying to do my own big boy job.
You know what's fun? Having a master's degree and being permitted in these two states out here, Wyoming and Colorado, and getting constant calls. Hey, can you join this project? And being like, yeah, fine. What are you going to pay me? And then I'm pitting two pig dealers against each other, seeing who will pay me more. And then I run into Dr. Devin Pettigrew out in the field. I'm supposed to take pictures of bulldozers cutting through grass so I can tell, confirm there's no archaeology. And then Dr. Pettigrew comes and takes pictures of me to confirm that I am taking pictures of bulldozers confirming there's no archaeology. And the man has a doctorate and also was poached by this job. And they were like, this is how much money we'll pay you. And he was like, I'm in. So we're out here. For those of you who don't know, monitoring is just that. Bulldozers and cranes and excavators dig holes, and an archaeologist and a paleontologist have to sit there and make sure no artifacts or fossils come out.
So I got headhunted for that job too.
I'm sure you did. Probably Todd Surville and Bob Kelly themselves got headhunted for this job.
I got a call from a message on LinkedIn like, hey, we have this exciting opportunity. And I thought I was talking to like an archaeologist. No, I was talking to a headhunter. And I was like, I have a tenure track position. Like, can you compete with that? Like, I think we can arrange something. And I was like, okay, I'm listening. Talked to him on the phone. I was like, so this is what I'm making. This is how long my contract's for. And like, yeah, we just, you know, we can't compete with that. And I was like, yeah, because they wanted me to like drive out from Bloomington. They weren't going to relocate me. They're like, you want to work in Wyoming? I'm like, I live in Indiana now. Like, well, we pay for travel. It's like it's 2 days to get out there. Fuck you.
That's what they do, man. Those big hiring agencies, like I think it was ACTalent headhunted me. And like, or no, the company itself, I can't name the name, but then ACTalent, which I don't care about naming the name, because they literally tried to mob boss me into this job. And I was like, hey, I'm actually working with this company because they're going to pay me more, and they offered me more. And they were like, oh, what is their name? We'll shoot them an email. And then they shot them an email. And then I was like, yeah, you're going to pay me more? And then they still didn't pay me more. And then they were like, it would be very wise of you to take this job. And I was like, are you threatening me? Like, what the fuck? And they were like, you'll burn many bridges out here. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going with the company that I like. And like, it's just so weird, man. All those big, like, these projects really need to get done.
Yeah. I've been thinking about CRM a lot recently, not because I want to get back into it, because the new program I'm in, like, Indiana doesn't have a master's. They don't offer a master's. You like get it along the way, and there's really no CRM focus. Like at Wyoming, there was Rick Weatherman's CRM lab. Like, you learned methods, but like in my program at the moment, no one's really teaching methods. They teach like fun things, don't get me wrong, but in terms of the applicability of some of the courses that you learned through your PhD program here, don't translate well to cultural resources management. And so we had to have like some fun conversations these past couple weeks of like, can we think about doing a master's program? Because some students will enroll in the PhD and then they'll pass their qualifying exams, which gets them their master's, and then they just leave. So there's no thesis involved. They just have to answer a couple questions and then they're out. And it's like, okay, now what can you do with an archaeology master's without a thesis or without field work? It's a different landscape than when I think this program that I'm in now was founded 100 years ago, you know, like this is a very old four fields department. And I think it's reflected in some of those ways. So we're trying to work out, because Alex Crabe's going to be moving out here to start a CRM job out in Kentucky. So me and him were talking about the possibility of me sending students in the program in Indiana to do summer CRM with Crabe's company.
Good. Yeah. And again, for the audience listening, like, again, we stress this all the time. You don't have to be a professor. There are so many job opportunities in anthropology where having a PhD might overqualify you. I'm sure Devin is paid a little more than me. He's working for a different company because he has a PhD. But like, I can guarantee you it's $3 more an hour.
Yeah, like, no, don't get a PhD. Not in this field. I mean, there's right now we have five, maybe six job openings for PhD archaeologists. Six. So, and all you can do with a PhD in archaeology is teach. You don't need one. I'm sorry.
And yeah, don't unless you've any.
And I see like a lot of folks are like, well, I'll just work in a museum. And it's like, wait a moment. And like, David, me and you both worked in museums or curators. It's like, you can't just work in a fucking museum if you have a PhD in archaeology. You need curatorial training or like a background, or like you actually have to have worked and gained experience in a museum to work in a museum.
Federal or state jobs in which you have to like have previous federal and state experience and have a federal resume getting all those things, and which you get through CRM.
Yeah.
Well, that's not always the case. I mean, obviously, you know that too, but it just depends. Yeah.
But like, don't think just because you have a PhD that opens you up. Like, as David said, you'll be overeducated for most jobs. Just get a master's, like get the two. And you know, if they want you to get a PhD, a lot of companies will pay for it. So,
yeah. But again, if you want a PhD and there's questions that keep you up at night and you're like, I want to fight with my very intelligent colleagues for three jobs that are open, even though there's 17 of us, go for it. Like, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah, just think of the hundreds of archaeologists that didn't get the six jobs last year. They're also in the job market for the six jobs that are open this year.
And they're working with me.
Yeah.
In a month or two, I'll be in charge of a few of them. Anyway, we're not pessimistic about the field in any regard. Love archaeology, which is why today we're going to talk about Middle Earth.
Yes, that's a fantastic segue. So, yeah, so I've been watching, and David, so have you. We've been watching War of the Ring.
Rings of Power, you plebe.
That one, but it's based
War
on
of the War Ring of the is Ring. An Xbox 360 game.
That's so good. Not really. It's kind of garbage. But I've been watching Rings of Power on the Amazon TV show. I'm liking it so far, man. How about you?
I like it. And also, if you guys are like, I'm going to tune out now, don't turn out, because it'll be worth your time. Yeah, dude, like a lot of people are hating on it. I like it. Let's address the race thing. I don't see anybody complaining that it's race thing. I see people complaining that people are complaining about it being a race thing. And I haven't seen one person be like, I don't want black hobbits. Like, I've seen people say, like, people are saying they don't want black hobbits. They're making that up. I haven't seen one person who said that. And let's talk about that real quick. I was thinking about it. Obviously, Tolkien wrote that there's fair-skinned elves. Like, there, it's obviously he's talking about white people. But, like, what is the issue with just casting black actors and Hispanic actors and Asian actors to play, like, extras in the background or main characters? Like, obviously, in Middle Earth, it would, you could maybe assume that they came from the Southlands or out east or something, and that's why they're there, which might be confusing. But also, like, you can just have various people play roles. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. I don't, and I kind of mirror that sentiment. Maybe it's just because me and you have like very curated communities on social media, but I've kind of seen the same thing. I haven't directly seen anyone complain about race, but I have seen articles that are like people are saying that it's about race. So
I, yeah, I think it's all bullshit. like most things, I don't see anybody actually complain. I have seen people say it's too woke, which might be referring to that, but. If having a strong female character that we've known through Middle Earth for years is wokeness, then like riddle me conservative. riddle me Democratic. I don't
know. Yeah. What I enjoyed about this series is that it takes place before the War of the Ring, which, you know, Sam and Frodo take the ring to Mordor, and like the, it's prior to The Hobbit, the book, and the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
So, and what's fascinating to me, because I was like reading this article, which had my gears turning in my noggin, is that those living in the Third Age are living in a dystopian future where like the events of the Second Age, that was like, you had Numenor and you had like the grandioseness of the elves and of men. And all that's gone by the Third Age. And like when you, like you watch The Hobbit and these other movies, Hobbit, Twin Towers and Return of the King.
The Twin Towers?
The Two Towers, fuck.
It's okay. R.I.P.
R.I.P. I mean, it was just the 21st anniversary not too long ago. But there's all this decay and, you know, rubble all over the place. And when you watch Return of the King, they talk about how even Minas Tirith is in downfall, or like it's in decline. The leaves of like the tree, the white tree of Gondor, hasn't bloomed in God knows how long. And so there, these people are living in a dystopian future in which like the height of their cultures was in the past during the Second Age. And it's kind of that longing to get back to it. And so, you know, even like when you watch The Fellowship after Frodo's been stabbed by a Nazgul, you know, they're in the
ruins of Amon Sul.
Well, he got stabbed in the ruins of Amon Sul, but then they're like taking refuge with Aragorn underneath the stoned trolls from The Hobbit.
Right.
Yeah. And so like, I wonder at that point if in the Third Age there are any like Middle Earth archaeologists running around, because I mean there's like literate and educated people, and I'd be curious because they have all these libraries that talk about all these fantastic things, like, and they see remnants of these past cultures. You know, what do they think of them, and if there's anyone actually like trying to check things out?
Yeah, I guess for context, the First Age is like with creation. Second Age is where the Rings of Power takes place, which is, you know, dealing with the aftermath of Melkor, Morgoth, and Sauron having taken over his... Melkor was a fallen angel, and Sauron is a Maia, just like Gandalf or Saruman or Radagast or Balrogs. They're like an angel-type creature. Anyway, yes, we are living in that aftermath in this series. Even in the Third Age, too, as you pointed out. But an interesting thing you mentioned is, like, are there archaeology or archaeologists going on? We see in the Fellowship, and even in the book, too, Gandalf rides to Minas Tirith to read the scrolls, kind of like a Library of Alexandria-type situation about Isildur and his diaries and, like, trying to find out more about the ring. And, like, there's men have those books because men don't live long. If you're Numenorean, you live like a couple hundred years, but you die. Elves live forever. Mortal men live regular lifespans like we do.
Yep.
So you would have had Numenoreans like Aragorn or elves who were alive at the time of a lot of these events. So they would have known like what was going on. They don't necessarily need archaeologists, but that's an interesting point. Like, men need that. They need those accounts and they need those scrolls to know what was going on. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely. Aragorn is Dúnedain, right? So, like, Gondorians come from Numenor after the fall, and they're the, what are they called? Because there's, like, two factions of the Numenorians. You get the Black Numenorians that are hanging out in the south on the coast, and then you have, like, they're not called the Faithful. What the hell are they called? The ones that stay true to the elves.
The Faithful are what Aragorn's people were. Yeah, yeah. Like, the Numenorians that came over. They make Gondor and Arnor. And yeah, there's like men that side. So Sauron goes to Numenor and convinces the men to make the rings, and also convinces Numenor to like be evil. And the ones that aren't evil that side with the elves are given long life, they're gifted longer life, and they don't drown in the destruction of Numenor. And that's when Isildur and Elendil come over.
Yeah, and it's and it Isildur's brother, because it's the dad who settles Arnor, and then Isildur and his brother settle Gondor, Minas Tirith, and Minas. I think it's called Minas Morgul by the
very good, yes,
yes. Minas Morgul,
which is then taken over by Sauron and the Orcs, of course.
But then it becomes Minas Morgul, but it had a different name before that. It was like Minas something else.
I think it was Minas Morgul. No, you might be right. Changes, but the word you were looking for before, I think, was Dúnedain. And Dúnedain are just like not exiled Numenorean rangers, but it's like a faction of rangers that protect Middle Earth and like scout things. So like they were like, hunting for Gollum.
Particularly like Arnor. Like I think like the Dúnedain rangers are in the north, right? Because Arnor falls to the Witch King.
It does. And Arnor is where the Shire is technically and the remnants of Arnor. So the rangers kind of protect the hobbits in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was great archaeology talk. Next segment.
Well, we have to set up the background. But yeah, we'll get into the archaeology here in a bit. We'll be right back with episode 130 of Life in Ruins and Archaeology in Middle Earth here after these messages.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
And welcome back to episode 130 in Archaeology of Middle Earth here on the Life in Ruins podcast. So just for clarification, Minas Morgul was named Minas Ithil and was the home to Isildur prior to Sauron taking over the joint, renaming it Minas Morgul. And it appears in Return of the King, and it's basically, it's like the citadel for, who's the big baddie Nazgul?
The Witch King.
Witch King of Angmar. Yep. So that's his place. So,
which I believe they're theorizing the guy that's with Galadriel in Numenor right now in the series is the Witch King of Angmar, if not Sauron himself. Yeah.
Because we only know the name of one Nazgul, the Easterling. We don't know the identities of the other eight.
Right. I just saw a thing on this the other day. I can't remember his name. But yeah, Sauron turns into his fair form and kind of like, I think this is what Lucifer does, but he's a handsome, charming guy, kind of like Rasputin was not a handsome, charming guy, but
he was a drunk Russian who liked to fornicate a lot.
Which, that was closer to Wormtongue in the other movie, but they leave the Lothlorien, the Fellowship, and they go to the ruins of Amon Hen. And Aragorn says to, I think it's Frodo, and he's like, look, long have I desired to look upon the kings of old, going down the Anduin River. And they go and they look at this, and then you get to the ruins of Amon Hen where Boromir dies and they get attacked by the Uruks or the Uruk-hai. And like there's just old statues and it's like an old deserted kingdom. And like I always thought that was super cool in the Fellowship because the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit came out before the Silmarillion, like long before. So like there was this sense of like age and antiquity to Middle Earth too that was like super fascinating. And now I'm an archaeologist. So I guess there was cool archaeology in it.
I never really understood the like the actual trail that they all took until like actually looking at a map and realizing like how exactly where the fellowship went. And so like those ruins that you're talking about where Boromir is killed, but what's the orc's name or Orokai's name?
He's added into the movie just to be like an antagonist, but right. His name is Lurtz.
Lurtz, that's right.
Yeah.
I can't remember. What's the history of that place?
Amenhen?
Yeah.
Well, like most places in Ithilien or like Gondor, it's like, I think it was just like part of the kingdoms of Arnor and Gondor, like a smaller kingdom. Let me look it up. Amenhen. Early days of Gondor. Yeah, so it's just part of Gondor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like another area, kind of like Osgiliath or something like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because like in the war in the Second Age, I mean, like Sauron got all the way to Arnor, like went super west with his guys and like mm-hmm. pillaged the whole joint. Like the history that's provided in the Silmarillion and some of the extra stuff is just crazy. The amount of like background, just world building that J.R.R. Tolkien did is just crazy.
Yeah, he set the precedent for like what fantasy has to be. Pretty crazy.
Because even if you look at games like Skyrim, there's like over 300 something books within Skyrim. Like oh, just right. for like world
find in the books in the game.
Yeah, yeah. Like just for world building purposes that you don't actually have to read or do anything with or help you at all.
Right. And there's orcs and there's dragons and giants and things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like he started the series because of languages. Like he wanted to make languages. He was a linguist. He translated Beowulf as his like dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think Elvish is based off of Finnish. And yeah. And like the breadth of the world in that sense is like incredible with all the different languages and then the histories, but also like the maps. Like I have two books that are like maps of Middle Earth and like, I'm sure there's a GIS like database somewhere of like different layers and stuff of Middle Earth, but yeah, you can trace like the fellowship and things like that. But the antiquity of it is insane. Cause you can look at the maps and like technically Middle Earth, like we live in the fourth age of Middle Earth. So like that's somewhere, I think the Shire is supposed to be like England, which would make Mordor the Middle East, which is kind of rough. But yeah, it's like, and then there's Beleriand, which sank. And then, like, there was Valinor, but the gods sunk it. So therefore, no one could get to the Undying Lands.
Yep.
This is in the end of the First Age, I think.
It's whenever Numenor falls, because Sauron gets captured when the Numenoreans invade. He's a prisoner, but, like, within a couple short years becomes, like, the advisor to the King of Numenor, poisons his mind, and basically mm-hmm. convinces the Numenoreans to invade the Undying Lands. And that's when, like,
that's
basically
it.
God, who's his name, I think?
Iluvatar.
Iluvatar basically says, no, no, and, like, orders a tsunami that wipes out the Numenor fleet, destroys Numenor, and Isildur, his father and brother, and the true Numenoreans are able to steal a seed of the white tree of Numenor, which becomes the white tree of Minas Ithil. And when that gets burned down, they're able to save a seed again and then plant it in Minas Tirith.
Oh, right. Actually, I don't even think I even... Obviously, I read that fact, but that just wasn't even in my head. Good call.
It's all just super fresh for me right now because I've been going down this rabbit hole of Middle Earth lore for a while now.
2013, 14 that I took the class on this, so it's been a while.
Yeah, take fun classes in college, everybody.
Yeah, like this, I hunted this class down because I'd heard someone took it, and I like emailed the professor like 8 times, like, will you teach this class again? And she's like, I need enough people to say so. And then enough people were like, can you teach this class again? So we did it. Yeah, it was awesome. And she would get into like the language, she broke down Elvish, like the syntax and like everything. She's like, this is how you would say it in Sindarin, and this is how you say it in Eldar. And I was like, oh my God. yeah, it was intense. Oh, but I was telling a friend this the other day. She was saying in class, and obviously you'll pick this up too, she was like, in the books, they reference a lot of certain foods, and some of them would be or like items. Tomatoes, potatoes, and tobacco. Does anyone know why these would be controversial? And I was like, oh, and I think I was like, Christian New World Domesticates. And she was just like, very good. Are you an anthropology student? And I was like, I sure am. But yeah, that's the only thing in the books that are like relevant to like North America, which I think he just didn't think about because they're very British things.
Yes, but very much came to Europe from America type deal. But even like just getting to like the archaeology, some of these things, like in The Hobbit in particular, when they find a couple of those swords, like there's archaeology or at least antiquarianism all the time. It's usually in the form of like weapons, though, like weapons from a bygone age showed up or like relics. Right. Like when Saruman gets killed at the beginning of Return of the King, one of the seeing stones.
Palantirs.
The Palantirs, right? That's from a... you know, like there's a lot of these powerful objects that were made by smiths that were trained by Sauron. And right. Sauron was trained in particular by like the top
Morgoth
Ainur smith.
Oh, Aule.
Because like Morgoth wasn't a smith. Yeah, Aule. So like Sauron was trained by Aule, who's like basically the equivalent of Hephaestus. The Greek god of smithing? Yeah, Hephaestus.
Or what's his name in Roman? Mars? No, Mars is war. Hephaestus is all I know. Let me see.
Yeah. So, and also that kind of goes like the myth, the world Vulcan. Building. Is it Vulcan?
I believe so. Let me see. Hephaestus.
Well, that makes sense.
Let me check. Yeah, Vulcan. Okay.
Huh.
I guess because like forages and... hey, that makes sense because the ring is destroyed in a volcano.
Yep.
Full circle, guys. What were you saying? Oh, yeah, the antiquarianism. Like, they just casually mention, like, when Thorin and co and Gandalf and Bilbo find the swords in the troll horde, is it Orcrist is Thorin's and...
It's like Goblin.
Glamdring yeah. is Gandalf's. Damn, I'm good at this. They're from the elven smiths of Gondolin, and Gondolin was a huge elven kingdom in the north that is just now gone. And like, there's a whole book now on the fall of Gondolin. It's just mentioned in the, or no, I think it's in the Silmarillion, but in the Unfinished Tales. But yeah, it's crazy. There's just like so much antiquity. I guess I keep thinking in prehistoric archaeology, there's not much of that in Middle Earth, but there's tons of historic archaeology.
Yeah. And even then it's like, technically there is no difference between, you know, like historic or prehistoric, because like there are elves who came over from Valinor who are still alive.
Right.
So it's like, there's no, you know, it's like, you know, the elves are just doing like oral tradition because they could talk to 1,000-year-old beings. They're just like, oh yeah, I was there. You know, like the fact that like, you know, the big, fuck, I don't know. I forget his name. I should know this. The elf that's running Rivendell.
Elrond.
The fact that like Elrond fought with the Sealdor and is just like, fostered all of Isildur's kids for like 1,000 years.
Yeah. 2,000 years. No, yeah, 3,000 years. Yeah.
Basically just watched all of Isildur's fuck ups until Aragorn shows up and like unites the place. Like,
pretty crazy, man. And like, I remember my dad when I was a kid watching these movies, he was like, could you imagine living 3,000 years? And I was like, no. And I bring that up too because in the class I took, she was like, Tolkien called this the doom of men, like that they had to, that they died. And the doom
was the gift of men.
Right. And she was like, they refer to it as the doom of men, but they call it the gift of men, or the elves call it that to them, because like it's torture living that long. Like it's a pain to them that they have to live that long. And they finally are like, I'm going to leave Middle Earth and go to the Undying Lands because like this is insufferable. But men get to live and die and have a whole life, which is why the whole Aragorn and Arwen and Beren and Lúthien story is tragic, because like, would you rather have one quick life loving somebody to the fullest, or like have to live your entire life, I guess, with or without a partner? I don't know. It's tough.
Which is also why like elves are really like reticent to go to war, because that's like the only time they can die.
Right.
Like they're not super thrilled about that.
No, but in the shows and the movies, they kind of just throw elves left and right. In Helm's Deep, no one's like, man, that guy lived for 4,000 years. Better, let's give him a good funeral. They just like fodder. But can we just mention the fight at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, which takes place in the Silmarillion, like that's what the Rings of Power will end at, that battle. Like the elves, like taking out the shifting from bows to the swords, and that like lineup of like how they're killing the orcs was like, fourth grade me was like, whoa.
Yes.
It was insane, dude. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying other histories and stuff. Like Tom Bombadil is old. He can talk to them about histories and.
And so, yeah, it's just like there's so many, there's a whole race of beings that can live forever who basically record everything that happened and are just reminders of the missteps of men. And then you basically, and then you have these huge libraries from Gondor in particular, but they talk about a Begon age or from the height of Gondor. It's just, and then it's just really like what we see at the end of Return of the King is like the rise of men again. Cause up until that point, they're really on a subsequent decline since Numenor fell in the Second Age. Like they're, no one's doing great. Like there's kingdoms in the north that got laid waste by the Witch King. Like there's a whole separate story of wars that go on there. Dwarves are always getting run out of their halls by dragons or some such. And like the reason that you don't even see elves or dwarves help out at Minas Tirith or Pelennor Fields is because while all the events are happening around there, Galadriel and the Lothlorien elves are like weighing lace or defending against.
They're being besieged by the.
Besieged by orcs from Dol. What is it?
Dol Guldur.
Something like that. Yeah.
It's at the south of Mirkwood.
Yeah, Dol Guldur, which is a huge point in the Hobbit series. And then also the Men of Dale and the dwarves of the Lone Mountain, they actually get beaten by Haradrim, and they're like held up in the Lonely Mountain. Like they can't be breached. Like they actually lost.
Easterlings, I can't remember.
Easterlings, yeah. So sorry, not Harad. You're right. And so, yeah. Rune, that's them, right? Easterlings are from Rune?
Rune is east, but yeah, it just, I think there's,
and then
Harad's
in the south. I'm trying to do my
Harad, yeah. Is elvish for south, yeah. But yes, I can't remember. Rune is, I think it's the Sea of Rune is out there, and that's like just the only landmark we know. Oh, that's east.
Yeah, so they're from Rune, which is in the east, and they actually, yeah, they beat the Men of Dale and the Dwarves of the Lonely Mountain, Erebor. And the survivors just hold up in Erebor. And once the Rune hear about the ring going back in the volcano, they just dip out. Like, they're, yeah. Like, oh, we can't win this. So, like, Minas Tirith is just one point of, like, this three-point plan that Sauron had attacking, like, all the races of Middle-earth, all of which are in decline.
Right. I'd love to talk a lot more about dwarves, so let's hop into the next segment.
All right, sweet.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to A Life in Ruins podcast, which is now A Life of Tolkien podcast. We are talking about, no, we'll go back to archaeology after this, but I wanted to talk about the dwarves because you don't get to hear any lore of the dwarves really in the Lord of the Rings because they're not a focus. It's about elves and men, but you get a lot more of it in The Hobbit, but that's really just Third Age dwarves. But in the creation of the world, the Vala, Aule, who's the smith god we were talking about, wanted to create beings that could, like, he could teach the knowledge of, like, smithing to and, like, have people to help him. So he just created the dwarves, and, like, Eru was like, whoa, hang on. like, I was going to make elves real quick and men. So can you just not? So he was about to destroy them. And then he was like, the gods were like, no, like, you can keep them. Just like, make sure they sleep until, you know, the elves awake. So the elves awake and men awake, and then dwarves are allowed to awaken too. So they're like, they worship Aule, which they mention a lot in this, the new series. So like, dwarves are the oldest creatures in Middle Earth, technically, which is pretty crazy.
But they didn't have souls. Yeah, because the Smith God made them, and they were like basically automata. He's about to get rid of them. Then Aule is like, no, I'll give them life, but like, the elves need to wake up first. And then, do they wake up before men or after men?
Dwarves? I don't recall. I know it's after elves.
Because the elves are 100% Aule's, not Aule's favorite. Is it Aule? Eru's favorite. Yeah, Iluvatar or Eru, the chosen one, creator. Elves are his favorite, like, hands down. And so, yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome. So when Sauron convinces everyone to make the Rings of Power, the dwarves are like, all right, hell yeah. And they get their seven rings. And then when he tries to corrupt them all with the one ring, like, the three rings given to the elves, which we talked about last time with Connor, the elves were like, I don't know about that. But the nine rings were given to men. They were like, oh, then they got super corrupted, which we see with the Isildur. And then they become the Nazgul. And he was like, dwarves, you want to help like with these rings? And they were like, no, they just like kept the rings and like minded their own business, which is why Elrond is like, they care nothing for the troubles of men. Like,
because they weren't affected.
No,
yeah, they just, like, dwarves weren't affected by the rings, the one ring, and the elves weren't either. Like, when Sauron makes the one ring to rule them all, like, it just alerts the other three, like Elrond, Galadriel, and I forget who the third.
Elrond, Celeborn, and no, sorry,
Celebrimbor.
Galadriel, Celeborn, and I think it's Gil-galad that gets a ring.
Who's the smith that made him? Is it Celebrimbor?
Celebrimbor makes them, but he didn't get a ring.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Sauron catches him after burning that city to the ground and tortures the fuck out of him for information on the rings.
Yes. That doesn't end well for him.
That's when he sends the rings out to the dwarves to corrupt them, but they're too hard to be corrupted, and sends out the nine to men and corrupts the living fuck out of men.
And he sends, like, I think it's a Nazgul or someone, or like a emissary to the Lonely Mountain. And they're like, hey, dwarves, you want to help Sauron? And they're just like, get out. And they just like, like what you hear about the dwarves from Gimli and Gloin in the Council of Elrond.
Yeah, cool. They're not. Yeah, because they're not, you know, really children of Eru. Like, they're really, as you said, their own thing. They just want to mine stuff. Like, they're just happy being smiths.
And like, something that's really interesting too is my dad pointed out when we saw the hobbits in the theaters, he was like, it's like they have this giant mountain, they mine too much, they get too like hung up on gold and jewels and riches, and then they're forced to flee their homeland and wander Middle Earth for years, and they have huge noses. And my dad, who's not the Jewish one, turns and looks at me and he's like, the Jews of Middle Earth. And I was like, holy shit. Tolkien really went deep on that one. But I don't think that was his intention, but like, it would make sense because the Jews are before Christians and Catholics, which he would be. But anyway, I just thought that was really funny. Never thought about it like that. Moving on.
I mean, Tolkien got inspiration from all over the world on that. And it kind of, in terms of anthropology, like, there is some like sociocultural stuff about the hero's tale that goes into it, and like some of these like major themes that we see through human narratives across the globe are evident within the Lord of the Rings, not necessarily the Hobbit, but definitely Lord of the Rings and his world building. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, dude, J.R.R. Tolkien like created this whole mythos for a children's book. Like, people forget the Hobbit was first, and the Hobbit is like a 100-page book with pictures. Yeah, for his son, like, created languages, like backstory for that, and then. Yeah, he didn't write Lord of the Rings till a little bit after, but he already had all the lore ready for Hobbit.
Yeah, because I think he had written like a lot of the Silmarillion before that, but it was like too much to like just throw into a book. So he made the Hobbit to like dip his toes into this world as a children's story to his kid. And yeah, then the Lord of the Rings was like the expanded sequel to that. that teacher in that class said that when he died, I think he's buried at Oxford. Mm-hmm. And like their tombstones with him and his wife say Baron and Luthien, and his wife was like not down with that, but he's like, yeah, just do it anyway. He also was in a group called the Inklings at Oxford, where they like would meet. It's just a bunch of old dudes like meeting up to drink at a tavern, and C.S. Lewis was one of them too, and then he wrote the Chronicles of Narnia in response to the Lord of the Rings, yeah, which is a lot more overtly Christian.
Yes. Basically, yeah, the lion is Jesus.
Yeah, but the first book, what is it? The Magician's Nephew, right. In that book, they get magic rings and hop through these pools of water in this like weird ethereal place where they can jump into different worlds, and one of them is Narnia. And like it starts with magic rings as well. So the dudes must have had like some friendship rings with each other in this club or something. Yeah, Aslan. But yeah, we should probably get back to the archaeology.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like, you know, we don't see any archaeologists or people passing as archaeologists or relic hunters. People just mostly the books that we've read just happen upon relics of the past. But it's like when they get to the ruins, or not the ruins, where the hell is it? In the extended editions, and Return of the King, when Frodo, Sam, and Gollum, you know, are making their way from Osgiliath to the secret passage next to Minas Morgul, they come across like statues of former Gondorian kings. And I'm always when I see that, I'm like reminded of my favorite poem in the whole wide world, Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. Like when I see these like major epic monuments that are always like in Lord of the Rings, just like broken and just chilling, I'm like, it brings me back to like thinking about those 19th century, you know, antiquarian accounts of like Egypt and Greece.
And I didn't think about Numenor. I mean, obviously it's a parallel to Atlantis being like an island in the middle of the ocean that sinks, but like the very Greek and Roman like vibe that Numenor has in the show was pretty sweet to me. I didn't think about it like that, as Aragorn being Atlantean. And so therefore you see all these like pseudo Atlantean statues all over the place.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Can you imagine the underwater archaeology of Numenor? Cause it's still there. Like mostly of it's made out of stone.
Well, yeah. And Beleriand's just completely sank. So there's a whole kingdom underwater.
It's like, what's Dodgerland? I mean, it's nowhere near the size of Dodgerland, or Dodgerland's nowhere near the size of that old continent. But like, for those that don't know, Dodgerland is the landmass that used to connect Britain with Europe. And there are like Mesolithic and Neolithic settlements there. They're just underneath the English Channel.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. A lot of land bridges in the world. There's one between Korea and Japan, too. That's how people got to Japan and Malaysia.
Wasn't there one to Australia at one point?
Malaysia. Sunda and Sahul, I think, were like those areas. But yeah, that's how people walked there.
We haven't found Amelia Earhart yet, have we?
I don't think so.
Search continues. But anyways, yeah, I mean, like, you don't, if you only watch the movies, you're not exposed to like the breadth of history that is that is in this fictional world.
Right. So
and
much
it's like, stuff. Yeah. Like, I appreciate the movies, but I mean, I appreciate most, you know, adaptations better having read the books, but in particular with Lord of the Rings, like all the background shit that happened in the first and second ages just make it, because they just drop like single lines, you know, and if you don't know anything, you're like, that's a weird comment to make. But if you know the background, like, oh, they're kind of giving hints to this thing, or it's a reference to this one line or one event in this one book.
Yeah. And a lot of like the changes that Jackson made in the trilogy too. I forget the name. The lady's name Walsh something. First name, last name's Walsh. Fran Walsh. She and Jackson like borrowed stuff from the expanded world of Middle Earth to like change a few things, which like super fans knew, but like in the movies, like we wouldn't have, like if you just watched the movies as a kid, like you didn't know. But yeah, I do like that like sense of like deep antiquity, because like Amun-Hen, like I always wanted to know what was going on there. And like I had to read the books to figure that out.
Yeah.
Super cool stuff. And like, did you play The War in the North?
I did.
I loved that game.
That game was so good.
You're an elf.
I see ads for it all the time on Facebook, and I did that once, and I actually got Battle for Middle Earth that way. But you just like PayPal this company like $30, and they'll send you a download code, and you can play it on like modern. You can get the whole suite. Yeah, dude.
Like the one with the dwarf, the elf, and the ranger in the Northern Kingdom?
Yeah, dude.
What? I thought it was only for Xbox. Anyway, yeah, in that one, like, you're fighting in the north, and you're fighting, like, at... crap. There's another dwarven stronghold up there that gets taken over by orcs. Mount something. Gundabad. And there's, like, a whole war going on there, which, obviously, Carlton alluded to earlier with, like, Dale and Lothlorien and Mirkwood. But... the dystopian nature of it, like, that's kind of why, like, when you bring that up, the Denethor, son of Ictheleon, is just kind of, like, done. Like, he's the steward waiting for Aragorn to return, and, like, they're just facing, like, their imminent doom from essentially zombies, is, like, what the orcs are. And, like, yeah, like, it's just, like, a moot point, and, like, like the Uruk-hai and the orcs go from like village to village in Rohan, like taking over the hill tribes and stuff. Yeah, it is like a very apocalyptic time. I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah, it's just not a good time to be anybody in this whole thing. It could have been made it could have been made much worse if the War of the Five Armies had gone Sauron's way, because then they've already had a launching point from Erebor. Like, there's just so many. If anyone messes up, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And there's like a whole half. There's probably a little bit of 2/3 of the continent that we don't see that's at war with Sauron, mm-hmm. doing their own thing. And that's elves and dwarves. It's not like they were lazy or didn't care. Like, they literally are just doing with their own invasions all across Middle Earth from the north and from the east. And it's like, sucks to suck. But they've been dealing with it since Isildur didn't cast the ring into the mountain.
Yeah. Fucking men, dude. In terms of like...
And then everything changed when Smeagol and his buddy were fishing one day and found the ring.
I saw a meme the other day that was like, when she's like, and something happened that the ring did not intend. It was picked up by the most unlikely of creatures, another hobbit. Like, I never like thought about that. It's like Gollum's also a hobbit. Yeah. And I guess like the ring too, like we had this discussion in class. Is it an allegory for nuclear weapons? No, because he already had started writing the book before World War II. I thought about it. And like, is it just, it's just power, right? And like, what happens to Gollum is essentially like he's a drug addict, and he's like hooked on this, and it turns him into like a strung out crackhead, which there would have been coked out people and drugged out people after World War I, which he would have known about. But like, yeah, it's just like, it's sad what happens to Gollum, but that's really the only allegory for it, because no one really has been Gollumed before. Maybe Michael Jackson, but like,
didn't J.R.R. Tolkien, like he was at the Battle of the Somme in World War I, right?
Yeah, he saw some shit.
he was a British soldier, like one of the most like horrific battles of World War I, like the Battle of the Somme. Yeah, one of my favorite epic rap battles of history is J.R.R. Tolkien versus George R.R. Martin.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of his top ones, dude. It was good. Oh, right. And that class, we did learn that Gandalf is an allegory for Odin, because he comes back from the dead, and his name's Gandalf Stormcrow or whatever. He's got like a million different names. Mithrandir, Gandalf.
Wasn't Mithrandir just mean elf friend?
I can't remember. That's what the men call him, Mithrandir. But
yeah, but I think
Olarin. Olarin is his actual name. Let me look it up. Olarin. Yeah, one of them might mean elf friend.
Yeah, I think it's Mithrandir. Dear is elf friend. That's his elvish name, just elf friend. Very fucking original. You know, you think these people live for thousands of years, they'd be more clever with their names of people.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess that's it for the archaeology of Middle Earth. But if you guys, I'll make a post about this on Instagram. And like, how about when you're listening to this episode, comment on that post, like what you find interesting about Middle Earth in terms of archaeology, or things that we might have missed, or if me and Carlton are wrong about something, let us know.
Yeah, I think we're more accurate about this fictional history than we were about the American Revolution history.
Yeah, which is really funny.
Yeah, I know there wasn't much archaeology, but it's like just fun to kind of come on and just nerd out about current topics. Yeah. But, you know, but these are the things we think about when we're watching these things, is like the antiquity of these places. And like, you know, I look at Numenor like, man, that's like 200 years of like underwater archaeological excavations to figure like a quarter of what the hell happened there.
Yeah, it'd be pretty wild.
Yeah. But on that note, we will leave links to the books down below in the episode description. Yeah, if you're still listening to our show on the All Shows feed, please stop. We really appreciate you doing that. However, please subscribe and download to our individual show. It helps us grow our audience, and we can use those metrics to advertisers and sponsors to show like, hey, we're worth it. Because when you guys do the All Shows feed, we can't use that in any meaningful way. So if you like our show, please subscribe and listen to us individually on a Life Ruins podcast.
Guys, please be sure to rate and review the podcast. If you found this one a little odd and you don't want to rate and review it, I understand. But I know a lot of you do really like the podcast. I've been told that all summer. And like, I know who you are. You might have an alias on iTunes, and I don't know if you've given me a thing. But if you have not given us a review, like, that literally helps our metrics, and it helps Apple, like, push the podcast up so that we could get more listeners and viewers, which will give you more stuff to hear. So rate and review the podcast, follow us on the socials, and yeah
because right now we only have 99 reviews on iTunes. We get like over 5,000 downloads a month, so you guys need to do some more rating. But and with that, we are out. Thanks for listening to a Life in Ruins podcast.
You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at a Life in Ruins podcast. And you can also email us at alifeinruinspodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, make sure to bring your archaeologists in from the cold and feed them beer.
David, do you have a joke for us today?
I do have a joke for you today. This one is Lord of the Ringsy and possibly not okay.
Oh boy.
Why was Gandalf always smoking a pipe?
Why?
Because it was a bad hobbit.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And with that, we are out.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.